Welcome to Whiskey Cast, the Cask Strength podcast featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie. This is episode number 107 for September 2nd, 2007.
People say, how are you doing? And I say, well, I'm rocking and rolling. And I'm rocking and rolling a bit, but I'm out there working and working hard, and I intend to carry on working hard.
He was the great legend of whiskey, and I felt so small and modest compared to him, and the way he was interested in what I could be thinking or finding, I found that absolutely incredible.
It's a sad week for whiskey enthusiasts. This past Thursday, Michael Jackson, the legendary whiskey and beer writer, passed away after a long battle with Parkinson's disease and other health problems. This past March, I had the chance to sit down with Michael for a few minutes. I'll replay that interview in a few minutes, along with memories of Michael from Martine Nuée. I had planned to devote this entire episode as a tribute to Michael Jackson, but remembering that Michael started his career as a newspaper man and was first and foremost a journalist, it just wouldn't do to leave the rest of the week's news out. That said, White & Mackay has taken another step toward increasing the supply of single malts down the road. The stills at Tomnavoulin Distillery in Murray are back in business. White & Mackay mothballed the distillery back in 1994. While it did produce some malt for a few weeks during 2000, it's been a tourist site since it was idled. The Northern Scott newspaper reports White & Mackay spent about $4 million upgrading equipment at the plant and will go into full production after the holidays with 10 workers at the site. Current plans are for most of the output to go into White & Mackay blends, but Tomnavoulin has been sold as a 12-year-old single malt in the past. We may see some of the new production as a single malt around the year 2020. Last month, I reported on the auction at Bonhams in Edinburgh for a vintage sterling silver flask once owned by Robert Burns. The auction was held as scheduled on August 23rd, and the flask sold for about $12,000. The winning bidder was not identified. This past week, several of America's top distillers spent the week at Mount Vernon outside Washington, D.C., firing up the stills at the restored distillery once owned by George Washington. I'll have much more on this next week, but it did give me a chance to get an update on the drought that's been affecting Tennessee and Kentucky. Tennessee's been the hardest hit. Distillers at Jack Daniel's and George Dickel have both been watching the forecasts and hoping for rain. Here's Gerald Webb of George Dickel.
The water level in our creek where we draw our cooling water from is getting quite low. Occasionally, there's insufficient water to cool down or to run the condensers. So we are bringing in water from another source in order to cool right now. But we desperately need some rain.
Any worries that it might impact production at all?
Not really. We think we'll be able to get through, but if it is the water supply for the city, and we do use that water for mashing, so it could impact it if it disrupts the water supply to the city.
Central Kentucky has fared a little better, and Dave Pickerel from Maker's Mark says a bit of luck is keeping the water flowing in Loretto.
It's not as severe for us right now as it is for some other people, but interestingly enough, last year, I don't know whether it was foresight or happy accident, but we put $1 million into adding to the dam.
You told me that back in Toronto.
And that's complete. And right now, even though we've had a little bit of a moderate drought, we're still 3 feet above the spillway height on the old dam. So we're already, the old dam held like 21 million gallons. We're already at like 30, 35 million gallons, and the dam will go all the way up to 60 million by the time it's completely full.
Now, Jimmy Russell of Maker's Mark spent some time at Mount Vernon this week as well, and during a tasting session with reporters Thursday night, he unveiled something new, a rye version of his namesake Russell's Reserve whiskey. No word on when it will be available at retailers. Here in the U.S., it's back-to-school time, and if you've thought about going back to school, Springbank Distillery in Campbelltown is offering 5 week-long sessions of its whiskey school starting in October. Veteran distiller Frank McCarty will be teaching the classes, and I'll have a full interview with Frank on the next episode of Whiskey Cast. In the meantime, you'll find the class schedule and links on the calendar of events at the WhiskeyCast website. The address is www.whiskeycast.com. Now let's get back to the main story and the saddest story of the week, the death of whiskey writer Michael Jackson. Michael's contributions to the world of whiskey are well documented. 5 editions of The Complete Guide to Single Malt Scotch, The Malt Whiskey Companion, a Lifetime Achievement Award from Malt Advocate magazine, 5 Glenfiddich Food and Drink Awards, the only writer to work with both Malt Advocate and Whiskey magazines, and one of the few people in the world to hold the title of Master of the Cache. His final book, Whiskey, The Definitive World Guide, came out in 2005 and won the James Beard Trophy. That doesn't even begin to include what he did with the beer, as well as the hundreds of tastings he led for whiskey lovers around the world. At the beginning of this year, Michael revealed his decade-long struggle with Parkinson's disease. Even as it sapped his strength, he continued to travel the world, leading whiskey and beer tastings. It was at one of those tastings in Philadelphia back on March 10th of this year when I finally had the chance to sit down with Michael for a few minutes. There are dozens of questions I never had the chance to ask him. Here's an edited version of that interview, though, starting with his fight against Parkinson's.
I've had Parkinson's for at least 10 years, possibly even, might be even nearer 20 years. And so it was diagnosed for sure 10 years ago, and in the last 10 years I've probably worked as hard or harder than ever, writing books and travelling around the world and doing public appearances and so forth, tutor tastings and things. With Parkinson's, the medication they give you tends to work well for 8 or 9 or 10 years, and it starts to lose its grip a little bit, so they've been trying other stuff with me. And when they're trying this other stuff, it's sometimes, you know, you're having different dosages and playing around with it a bit, and the problems of Parkinson's become a bit more evident, and that was really why I had to go public with it. People say, how are you doing? And I say, well, I'm rocking and rolling, and I'm rocking and rolling a bit, but I'm out there working and working hard, and I intend to carry on working hard.
What are you working on these days? You just came out with the big whiskey book a year or so ago. What are you working on now in terms of writing?
I've just been, I'm in the midst of a beer book at the moment. It's a beer book with a cast of thousands, a bit like the big whiskey book, you know, where I use other writers working with me. I'm in the midst of that right now. Then I'll be looking at whether it's about time to update the single malt book. I also have a book that I'm very, very pleased about, but it's only available in Italian. And that's, for some years I've been writing a lot of quite new work for me, new things, new areas, for this slow food movement in Italy. And they asked if they could put together an anthology of them, a lot of the pieces I've written for them. And they pepped it up as well with some pieces I've written for other magazines. So it's, they call this book, they call it Beer, Whiskey and Life, Stories by Michael Jackson. And it's, it was published earlier this year, late last year in Italian. And I'm now looking for an English language publisher for it, and I haven't really had that much time to pursue this. So right now we haven't got an English language publisher for it, but I hope we will, because it's got quite a lot of quite personal stuff in it. A lot of memoir stuff, stories about my family, some fictionalized stuff, some short stories. It gives another view of me and my writing.
You mentioned the update on the single malt scotch book.
The thing like the single malt book is that the publishers won't commit to a regular frequency. I mean, they want to update it frequently, but they won't commit to what that frequency should be. You know, it tends to sort of 2 or 3 years or 3 or 4 years. If they would commit to saying how often and when they would update, it would make my life easier. But they always want to I'll see how one edition sells before moving on to another. And it's complicated also by the fact that there are lots of foreign language editions of that book, and the foreign language publishers have different their own different agendas about when they want to publish. So I just have to go with the flow.
Last question. Of all the whiskies you've tasted over the years, when it comes down a few years from now, this is a question I routinely ask distillers, and I'll ask you the same one. When it comes down to that last final dram, any idea which one, if you had to pick them all, out of all of them, which one you'd pick for that final dram?
You know, people, of course, ask me about what's your favorite malt or what's your favorite whiskey, and I say, you know, it depends on where I am in the world and what mood I'm in and all the rest of it, which is true. So then they say things like, okay, you're before a firing squad. But instead of saying cigarette, they say whiskey. Which one are you going to choose? I'm not sure even that's a very good measure, because it would be one that would at least decide myself for the firing squad, but it would also be a question of my own feelings change about these things, you know, and I have my little bit of time when I have a particular crush on one distillery, perhaps, and in recent years I've been very fond of Ardbeg, and if something comes out from Ardbeg that has a particularly good smoky character, then I'll very often say, that's my favourite this week. You have to wait until the time comes. Could be that I'm immortal, you know.
Unfortunately, none of us are immortal. Michael died Thursday morning at his home, and the news spread around the world. I'd like to put Michael's impact in perspective. When he started writing about beer and whiskey 2 decades or so ago, he was the pioneer. His work made it possible for others to follow. Martine Nouet is no stranger to WhiskeyCast listeners. She's the editor of the French edition of Whiskey Magazine and a disciple of Michael Jackson's.
I met Michael, and I was thinking this morning, I can't remember the year. It seems I've known him for 20 years, and of course it's not that. I met him, I think it was 8 or 9 years ago, when we were invited by Glenfiddich to pick up, to choose, to select a cask with David Stewart. And so I was coming from Paris, and I met them, or the gang of journalists and PR people in London, and Michael was there. He was absolutely absorbed by reading his newspaper, and he hardly looked at me and say hello, and in the way he was, just looked over his glasses. And so I thought, oh well, that's the big star. I felt very, very shy, and the funny thing is, we had a dinner at the Craigellachie, and with everybody, it was a nice dinner, and I was sitting far from him. But in the morning, the day after, at breakfast, I'm an early bird, and Michael was an early bird too, and so I was having breakfast in an empty room. It was 7 o'clock, and there came Michael, so he sat my table, and we started chatting. Funny thing, not over whiskey, but over rum, because I had some rum, some port with me. and then the conversation came about all the aromas, wonderful aromas of rum, and compared with whiskey, and I think since this moment we haven't stopped really chatting about the smell, the scent, and really our friendship started here.
It's fair to say, isn't it, that Michael's work really paved the way for the entire generation of whiskey journalists that we have now.
Oh yes, and of course I knew before meeting him. I knew him through his book and from the Malt Whiskey Companion, and that was, I think, the first piece I wrote on whiskey. I was really a real beginner. It was I had been to Scotland because my partner was from Scottish ascendance and took me there, and visited distilleries, and I fell in love with Scotland and with all the landscapes and all. And I had with me, I had taken with me Michael's book because it's been translated in French, so that's the first edition, one of the first editions. And every time I sampled a whiskey, I would look at his notes, and I was always so. It's an enchantment. I mean, reading Michael, even in French, because it wasn't too badly translated, it was an enchantment.
I know that's how I started tasting whiskeys, too, was sitting there with a copy of The Companion and just comparing notes.
Yes, and it's, and finally, well, you had the book, The Companion, you did that, and when you were with Michael, it was just having The Companion, the real one, but it was just the same comparing notes, because Michael always, when he wrote his note, he was always asking you, and what do you think? What did you find? And I mean, he was always interested in other people's notes. And for me, I've always been very touched by that, because I mean, he didn't need to. He was the great legend of whiskey, and I felt so small and modest compared to him. And the way he was interested in what I could be thinking or finding, I found that absolutely incredible.
Do you think he'd almost be maybe a little embarrassed by all the fuss we're making over him?
He didn't like it, and he loved it. when seeing him in all whiskey events or everywhere, even when we were sometimes in London, in bookshops, people were coming to him asking him to sign, and he loved that. And it was his great pleasure to talk with people. And he was so so work hourly. I mean, he was so much in his work. Everything he did was toward his work. And I remember once when the last edition of The Companion was released, and we were in walking in London and just coming into a bookshop, and the first thing he did, he went just to the spirit department and looked if his book was there. And it was really funny, but it was there, but the Scotland and its whiskey wasn't there, and he felt sort of disappointed and a bit irritated that this book wasn't there.
I think we're all never going to be the same now. Yeah. I only got the chance to meet him a couple of times, but each time we talked, it felt like we'd known each other forever almost.
Yes, and well. For me, of course, we've all lost a great the greatest contributors to the knowledge of whiskey that whiskey had ever had. But and of course, it's a friend who disappears, and we were used not so much the last years because of his illness. He didn't have much time, but we used to write emails, early morning emails, and we chatted about a lot of things, because, well, we're talking here about whiskey, but Michael, of course, there was the beer as well, but also everything. I mean, he had such a great culture, and he was everything he told about was really interesting, and so we had these chats about different things, and he would taught me some words in Yiddish, and I would teach him some words in French that we could use in our stories, and we played on words, and because he was such a great word player, and his style is not only the knowledge he brought to people, but the style, the way he made people really love whiskey and dream of whiskey, and that was incomparable. So I'm really miss that too, because I think a lot of people, a lot of journalists say, and they're right to say that Michael Jackson was my mentor, and I think and he was mine, and he's helped me in so many ways. And another great legend, Jim McEwen, has been my mentor in tasting as well. So I'm so grateful to having been able to meet and work with such a great star of the whiskey world. And also, it's a little more than just work. It's just having these friendly relationships which make work so different.
Many of Michael's friends and colleagues are in transit this weekend, but they are sharing their memories by email. If you'd like to read their recollections, let me refer you to whiskeyfun.com, where Serge Valentin has taken down his regular content for a few days to post messages from Michael Jackson's friends and his readers. Finally, please join me and hundreds of others in raising a glass to Michael's memory, as he now drinks from the Angel's Share. One poster on the Whiskey Magazine forums suggested that Michael's probably already leading Angel's Share tastings and working on the first version of the Angel's Share Companion. Feel free to smile. I think Michael would have. That's all for this episode of Whiskey Cast. More next week from Mount Vernon and George Washington's Distillery. Whiskey Cast is a production of MG Media, copyright 2007, and comes to you from the charming, yet regrettably dry town of Haddonfield, New Jersey. I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Thanks for listening, and slán ja, Michael.